Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour from National Geographic, your dog's short-term memory. And we'll learn about how to protect our pets from obesity and the safe way to pick up a dog. Many animals, including your dog, may have horrible short-term memories. Dogs may forget an event less than 2 minutes after it happened, according to a new study. This was written by James Owen for the National Geographic. He writes, the next time your dog happily greets an old friend, remember this, your pup likely can't remember the last time they met. We often say someone has a memory like an elephant, or if it's a forgetful person, a goldfish. But in comparing our memory with that of animals, what's the truth? A recent investigation of short-term memory suggests animals don't remember specific events much at all. Instead, they store away useful information about what could help them survive. Covering 25 species that ranged from dolphins to bees, the study found the average short-term memory span of animals was 27 seconds, which was the midway point before the memory is lost, according to a team led by Johan Lind, an ethologist at the Center for Study of Cultural Evolution at Stockholm University in Sweden. Dogs forget an event within 2 minutes. Chimpanzees at around 20 seconds are worse than rats at remembering things, while the memory spans of three other primates, baboons, pig-tailed macaques, and squirrel monkeys exceeded only bees, the sole study participant that wasn't either a mammal or a bird. Since chimps are our closest living relatives, Lind said that he was surprised by their poor performance. It suggests human capacity for memory evolved after we branched from the most recent shared ancestor with chimps over 6 million years ago. Reported in late 2014 in the journal Behavioral Processes, the findings drew on data from almost 100 studies of captive animals that used a memory test of recent random events known as the Delayed Matching to Sample or DMTS method. In this test, an animal is typically shown a visual stimulus such as a red circle. The red circle disappears, then after a delay, it's shown again with another sample stimulus, a blue square, say. The animal, usually with the incentive of a food reward, has to select the original sample it saw. Compared with animals, humans find this type of test a breeze. We pick the correct sample effortlessly after 48 hours or more, studies have shown. The data tell us that animals have no long-term memory of arbitrary events, Lind said. Based on the new study, we think humans' ability to remember arbitrary events is unique. Memories are not created equal. This ability is also called episodic memory, and it allows us to remember almost any occurrence, however trivial, for long periods. We experience this daily when we remember where we parked the car or that we have to pay a bill next week, Lynn said. While there are plenty of examples of animals with long memories, elephants never forgetting a face, the cat that's scared of the pet carrier after a past visit to the vet, swallows returning to last summer's nest. They aren't using episodic memory, according to Lind. Such cases are due to associative memories, he says. They're not based on memories of specific events. In the second case, the cat associates the carrier with danger. Such memories are very robust and will stay for a long time, even for life in animals. That's because animals may have specialized memory systems hardwired to remember certain biologically relevant information, such as where to find food, the study authors proposed. Take the example of the Western scrub jay, a food caching bird whose ability to remember and choose between its buried stories has been reported as evidence of episodic-like memory in animals. Scrub jays, like the one above, can remember where they hid their food, but their short-term memories aren't great, according to researchers. But Lynn said if these scrub jays had an episodic memory, as humans do, they would have no problem solving the matching to sample experiment. The scrub jay's performance in the experiment is really no different than that of other birds, however. Their memory will decay within half a minute, he said. Mental time travel. Scientists see this memory distinction as key to trying to understand what mental skills we share with other animals and what's unique about the mind, about the human mind. The study of episodic memory is crucial since it is still under debate whether other animals can retrieve memories of personal past events in the same way humans do. Gemma Martin Ordaz, who studies animal and human cognition at Newcastle University's Institute of Neuroscience in England, said in an email, for example, I remember that I went for a run to the park yesterday, and I am perfectly aware that this memory is part of my personal past experience, said Martin Ordaz, who wasn't involved in the new study. Given our current knowledge, however, it might be too early to argue that humans are the only ones who are able to mentally travel back and forward in time, she added. Martin Ordaz's own research has found evidence that great apes do remember episodic-like details for days and even years, noted Victoria Templer, a psychologist at Providence College in Rhode Island. Both researchers urged caution in interpreting the results of the new study. As the study authors themselves observed, some species or individuals might adjust well to a laboratory environment, and some may not, Templer said. For instance, it could be that chimpanzees recollected worse than rats in the DMTS experiments because the rats had more training in the memory task. But if the short-term memory spans of chimps and other primates really are as mediocre as the DMTS tests indicate, the study reminds us that evolution is not in a unidirectional ladder of improvement, with humans at the top and apes close behind, Templer said. That's something for us humans to remember. We might not be as smart as we like to think. Next, pets and obesity. This is from Vet Street. Just like humans, overweight pets run a risk of developing illnesses that shorten their lifespan. This guide will help you manage your pet's weight issues. Recent studies estimate that just over 50% of all pets in the United States are considered overweight or even obese. Being overweight can lead to diabetes, joint disease, respiratory problems, and more. But the good news is that with a little effort, you can keep your pet trim and potentially extend his lifespan by years. First, monitor your pet's intake. While creating an effective weight loss plan for a dog or cat isn't easy, the formula for managing a pet's weight is quite simple. If calories burned exceed calories consumed in food and treats, your pet loses weight. Much of the difficulty lies in the fact that we're often unfamiliar with our pet's daily calorie requirements. What's more, it's hard for even the most conscientious pet owner to get accurate calorie information from some pet food labels. In addition, if multiple family members feed or give your pet treats, it can get even more complicated to monitor your dog's or cat's intake. But before you visit the vet, try and get a handle on the volume of food and treats your pet takes in during the day. Next, get a diagnosis. Because a pet can put on weight so gradually that you may not notice, it's important to talk to your vet about your pet's weight. Much like the body mass index for humans, the body condition score, or BCS, is a standardized scale to determine whether your pet is fit as a fiddle, overweight, or obese. Your vet can assess this for you. Depending on your pet's health, your vet may also want to run diagnostic tests to ensure that your dog or cat's weight problem isn't the result of underlying health issues, such as thyroid disease. Then create a plan and tip the scales in your pet's favor. Once your pet has been diagnosed with a weight problem, it's time to create a weight loss plan. Just as in humans, canine and feline weight problems aren't a quick fix. Work with your vet to establish a long-term solution. Here are a few tips to get your pet on the right track. Pick reasonable weight loss goals. Work with your vet to determine how much weight your pet needs to lose and to build a plan to achieve that goal gradually with plenty of small victories along the way. Be realistic. Your vet will most likely recommend a plan that combines both dietary and exercise modifications, such as leash walks or swimming. Talk frankly with your vet and be upfront about how much time and energy you can commit to your pet's weight loss goals. Discuss your pet's health, as well as any exercise limitations. For example, if your dog has joint pain, you may need to address this before you can increase his daily workout routine. Exercising indoor cats can be difficult, so you may need to ask about games and toys. Feel free to discuss all of these things with your vet. Commit to your pet. There's no reason to spend time feeling guilty about your pet's weight problem. Instead of dwelling on it, commit to your pet's future health and stay positive. Measure your feeding. The only way to track how many calories your pet consumes each day is to carefully measure each time you feed. Don't forget to count the calories in your pet's treats, as they can add up quickly. If you must give treats, discuss low-calorie treats or small training treats with your vet. Be prepared for setbacks. Your pet may refuse diet food or beg for table scraps. You must be mentally prepared to stay strong and solve problems as they arise. If you cave into your dog's begging or feed your cat extra treats, your diet plan is doomed. Talk to your vet about how to deal with any setbacks as they arise. Make the process fun. Your vet may schedule periodic weigh-ins to track your pet's progress. Work to make these positive and fun. Each time you go to the vet, schedule an extra walk in the park. Each time your pet reaches a goal, go to the pet store for a new toy. Some vets take before and after photos to boost morale and encourage other pet owners facing similar challenges. Keep an eye on the big picture. While it may be difficult to resist your pet when he begs for treats, the consequences of failure are far worse. By reminding yourself about the negative health impacts of pet obesity, you're less likely to return to your old ways. And listeners, I'll add my own story to this about my two cats, Brownie and Lily. Brownie, a sleek Siamese mix who always stops eating when she is full and walks away with food still in her dish. Lily, who seems to never know when she's full, would immediately walk over to Brownie's dish and finish off what was left, in addition to her own, of course. Lily has a very thick coat, plushy and very thick, and it was hard to notice that she was gradually putting on weight over time. By the time it became evident, she was very overweight. Our vet advised me that she was at risk for diabetes and other serious complications, and she needed to lose that weight. He determined just how much weight, it was a lot, and how long it should take for her to get there safely. Our vet offered a pet weight loss program that Lily and I participated in. Yes, my cat Lily was on a weight loss program. We first had to get a good idea of how much Lily was actually eating. It turned out that the feeding portion recommended on the cat food package was way too high in calories for my indoor cat, and we reduced that amount by quite a bit, being careful that she didn't lose weight too fast, as this could cause its own set of problems. Lily's meals had to be measured for a specific amount each time she was fed. The cats had to be fed separately, or I had to watch them every time they were fed and pick up Brownie's dish the moment she walked away, because Lily was pretty fast at getting over there to finish it off. We had new activities to get Lily moving more to burn calories. She was encouraged to use the stairs and play activity games to get to her food, and both cats enjoyed some new chase games. Lily's weight was taken every month, and in a few months, she was back to a healthy range. She's one of those pets that never seems to be satisfied no matter how much food she's given, and it's up to me to make sure she stays healthy. What if you have a rabbit? Rabbits rank third on the list of obesity-prone pets, according to Lori Hess, DVM, DABVP at Vet Street. She says, dangle a carrot in front of a rabbit, and that bunny should hop. But if he's overweight, as are many of the pet rabbits I see in my practice, then he might not be able to. Just as in people, obesity is a large problem among captive rabbits who eat too much and exercise too little. A beefy bunny isn't best. When most people think of a rabbit, the image of a lean, muscular animal able to leap and jump high is what many people conjure up. For many pet rabbits, however, the reality is very different. Too many pet bunnies are housed in cages, barely big enough to turn around in, and often they come out of their cages for only a few minutes a day. Although these animals should be offered a predominantly high-fiber diet in the form of unlimited amounts of hay with some greens, too many are given ad lib high-carbohydrate pellets with only small amounts of hay. Overweight rabbits are prone to health problems, like other obese animals, but particularly to the development of hepatic lipidosis, a disease in which excess fat is deposited in the liver, where it interferes with liver function and may even cause death. Fat bunnies also commonly develop sore hock, or ulcers on the bottoms of their feet, from carrying excess weight. High carbohydrate and fat ingestion by bunnies can also lead to gastrointestinal upset and potentially to life-threatening problems. To prevent weight gain, the rule of thumb is no more than a quarter cup of pellets per 4 to 5 pounds of bunny per day. Also, like all other pets, rabbits need out-of-the-cage time daily to exercise, and should be encouraged to climb up ramps and hop onto different levels in their cages to help strengthen their muscles. But remember, before starting any diet or exercise plan with your bunny, be sure to consult with your veterinarian first to make sure you know how to help your pet lose weight safely. For example, some long-haired bunnies may look big, but in fact may be all hair and no fat. Your veterinarian can help you determine whether your bunny is at a good weight or not. Next, from Dr. Jessica Vogelsang, DVM, at Vet Street. Do you know how to properly pick up a dog? She writes, nothing warms my heart more than seeing a family welcome a new dog into their home. Growing up with a dog is one of the great joys of childhood, the bonding, the long walks after school, the shared distaste for green vegetables. On the other hand, nothing chills me more than seeing a young child grab a nervous pet and drag him by the paw to draw him close. I'm fortunate to be in a position where I feel very comfortable correcting this behavior and bringing it to the parent's attention. But it's shocking how often the parent will respond, "It's okay, he doesn't bite." In so many ways, animal care professions do a great job of teaching new pet parents the ins and outs of dog ownership, from the vaccine regimen to choosing the right time to spay and neuter. But in other ways, particularly when it comes to safe pet handling skills, many would argue that we're still playing catch-up. Safe dog handling is vital to the safety of both the pet and the person. Fortunately, good handling is a teachable skill. Here are 5 things your dog wishes you knew about picking him up. First, their limbs are more delicate than you think. Dog limbs are a wonder of form and function, meant to propel pups forward with speed and agility. They aren't designed to support the entire weight of the dog when it's suspended in the air, however. The most common form of dangerous pet handling I see, particularly with young children, is when they lift a pet by the front limbs as if it were a doll. Adults tend to put their hands under the armpits of the dog and lift as one would a human child. Both techniques are incorrect. When a dog is lifted by his front limbs instead of properly supported by the chest and pelvis, it puts unnatural force on the elbows, shoulders, front toes, and even spine as the pet dangles in the air. This can strain the muscles that support the front limbs and spine, tear ligaments, and potentially even dislocate a shoulder or elbow. In the worst case scenarios, it can damage the bones and cartilage, particularly if the pet struggles and is dropped. The pain and risk of injury is compounded in older dogs who may already experience degenerative changes in these joints, such as arthritis. Second, it hurts, even if you don't think it does. One of the greatest myths I hear dog owners repeating is, if he isn't yelping, he isn't hurting. Like people, some dogs are more dramatic than others and will waste no time letting you know if something bothers them. But other dogs are quite stoic and will tolerate discomfort to a much higher degree before protesting, assuming they protest at all. Clearly, yelping or growling are obvious signs of discomfort in a pet, but there are plenty more. All dog owners should know the basic signs of anxiety in a dog. Avoidance, struggling, averting his gaze, licking his lips, half moon eye or showing the whites of his eyes, and yawning are just a few. These signs are indicative of a dog who is uncomfortable, and that means you need to stop what you're doing and reassess the situation. Third, he hasn't been scruffed since he was a puppy. Another common misconception I hear is that scruffing or lifting a dog by the nape of his neck is a normal way to pick him up. After all, that's how his mother carried him when he was a puppy. Well, this is true. It was only in the brief early weeks of life, and this behavior doesn't continue when the pups are grown. Just as our mothers stop carrying us on their hips after a certain point, scruffing is not comfortable or natural for grown dogs. Fourth, he doesn't want to bite you. According to the CDC, about 4.5 million dog bites occur each year in the U.S., and half of those take place at home with a familiar dog. Children from 5 to 9 years of age are at highest risk. While there are many causes, understanding humane handling and the signs of stress are key ways dog owners can help prevent family members from becoming another statistic. While a dog owner may claim a bite is unprovoked, the truth is there often is provocation, but it is simply missed. There's no excuse for picking up a pet the wrong way, which brings us to the final point. Picking him up the right way is easy. If the dog is small, under 25 pounds, place your dominant arm under his chest, between the front limbs, while tucking his back and between that same arm and your torso, what some of us might refer to as the football hold. For medium-sized dogs, between 25 and 40 pounds, place your dominant arm behind the dog's back legs and your non-dominant arm around his chest, in front of the limbs, and stabilize the dog against your chest as you lift. This helps ensure the pet is properly supported and comfortable. Ideally, larger dogs really require two people to be picked up properly, one lifting from beneath the chest and the other lifting from the abdomen and rear. If your dog is scared or in pain, care should be taken to avoid getting your face or hands near his mouth in case he might bite. If he's injured and you need to lift him to safety, consider using a muzzle, but only if he is not having difficulty breathing, and sliding him onto a board for support. Aside from that, all children should know some important safety tips. Always, always ask permission before picking up a dog. If a pet shows signs of discomfort or tries to get away, you must let him go. And if a pet appears injured, don't pick him up. Get an adult to help. Interacting with dogs in a safe and humane manner helps increase safety, reduce injuries, and build trust. With a little training and encouragement, all kids can be taught the correct way to pick up a dog. As an added bonus, your kids can then teach their friends and other adults how to do it right. From Dr. Marty Becker, DVM at Vet Street, can all dogs swim? Dogs will naturally start dog paddling when they find themselves in water, but that doesn't mean that they can stay afloat for any length of time, that they like being in the water, or that they can safely swim. Dogs who can't swim, though they may try their best, are typically those with large, heavy chests in relation to their hindquarters, and they often have short muscles. These dogs may swim well enough to splash about a little under supervision while wearing a life vest, but that's about it. The most extreme example of these breeds, the bulldog, is so poorly built for water survival that breeders and rescue groups often require a home check to ensure that a pool is safely fenced off and that an emergency monitor is used to alert those inside the house when something such as a child or a dog breaks the surface of the water. Bulldogs typically sink like rocks. How to teach your dog to swim? There aren't any physical reasons why a border collie can't swim, but she may nonetheless be reluctant to do so. Even in breeds that were bred for swimming, such as Labrador retrievers, you'll occasionally find a dog who doesn't enjoy being in the water. You can try encouraging your dog to swim by going out and seeing if she'll follow and rewarding her with praise. Dogs who love to play fetch will often go out after tennis balls or other floating toys. You might get her swimming by letting her get comfortable at a certain depth and then throwing the toy in the water that's progressively deeper. Finally, many dogs will swim just to join in the fun if they are around other dogs who enjoy swimming. But again, if your dog comes to love swimming, safety is still up to you. Make sure your dog doesn't get overly tired and be aware that puppies and older dogs tire more easily and seem less aware of their fatigue until it's too late. Stay away from strong currents and areas with underwater debris that can entangle a dog. Keep your non-swimmer comfortable. If your dog never comes to enjoy swimming, she can still enjoy going to the lake with you. Make sure she wears a life vest. Booties wouldn't hurt if the sand is sizzling. She also must have nonstop access to cool drinking water and must be able to get into the shade as often as she wants. When she starts to get hot, take a bucket and soak her frequently, especially her belly. Be aware always of signs of heat stress. If you're able to keep your dog cool, she'll be able to enjoy her lake time with you safely, even if she never does learn to like swimming all that much. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thanks for listening. Please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.